That's why we say never meet your heroes. Because we always think that this person is so amazing. They've got everything together. And then we meet them and we come close and we say, okay, they don't have everything together. They just seem like they're having everything together.
Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to business people, journalists, authors, professors, ambassadors, leaders and luminaries from all over the world. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I'm originally from the Netherlands, happily residing in the beautiful Grand Canyon state of Arizona in the United States. I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. Our guest today is Zoe Fregou from Athens in Greece. Zoe is an organizational psychologist by profession, an agile leadership developer by expertise, a data-driven organizational change and culture transformer by passion, a model by hobby, an author by the force of nature, and a keynote speaker and podcast host because she loves sharing and spreading inspiration and building momentum. Maybe no surprise, her first name, Zoe, in the Greek language means life. So besides actually being from Greece, Zoe describes herself as full of life. Zoe is currently a PhD candidate at the Pantheon University in Athens. She is a mentor for Women on Top, an organization that brings equality to the workplace. She is also a senior member of the Hellenic Institute of Coaching, and Zoe was voted Best Career Coach in the Global Coaching Conference of 2021. You can learn more about Zoe Fregou on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Hello, Zoe. Yassa. Thank you for joining us.
Yassu Zive, thank you very much for having me over. What an introduction. Now, everything you're going to do, no matter how hard to try, I will fall short for sure. Thank you for that.
I doubt it. I have the feeling there's a lot of energy that you bring to the table. And I'm kind of curious, what inspired you to become a coach, a career coach, a performance coach? What brought that to you?
Well, actually, I do have a clinical license as well. I was actually working in the psychiatric hospital of Athens. I was doing alcoholic rehabilitation. But it was very soon that I realized that I'm very business-oriented. And I think that, you know, in the emotional intelligence suite, there is a particular variable that we call organizational awareness. And it has to do with how fast and easy it is for a person to understand the inner dynamics in an environment that they've never found themselves again. So I think that I score a bit high there because it's kind of easy for me to join an organization and approach it like a puzzle, understand which piece fits and why this piece doesn't fit and how to mix and match them so that they can give out the best. So I can say that it's an outcome that came really, really naturally to me.
Now, do you coach typically groups of people or are you coaching one particular individual in an organization or both?
Well, I would say that 50% of my clients are corporate and my specialty there is culture change. So they usually might come to me after a merger or a buyout or succession differences, or they just might want to change their culture into a more professional one or a more diversity and equality oriented one. So that's when I go and I do team building activities, group coaching, trainings as well. And everything that falls under this umbrella. But at the same time, I also have private clients that come to me globally from all over the world. And their issues are usually leadership development or soft skills development. Sometimes it can be burnout recovery, or they might be being mobbed in the workspace. So they need some help in order to know how to put more boundaries. So basically a little bit of both, I would say.
Yeah. And you seem to enjoy it, right? You like it.
Well, yes, I really, really like it. It's not just something that I do as a work. I really believe that our work is a big and important part of our identity. Therefore, it's our responsibility to find a way to make it healthier and more enjoyable. So we can't have such an important piece of our identity being associated with negative emotions.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, let's take a look at the 10 lessons. There's a lot of wisdom in there. Lesson number one. Everything is a negotiation. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts are that for many people, this isn't very clear. And they think that if they are polite enough or kind enough or patient enough, they're going to get something. And it's true. There is this, you know, public wisdom that says nice things come to those who wait, but only the things that are left behind by the ones that were running. And no one tells you the second part. So this is something that everyone needs to understand. When resources are limited, and in general, resources are limited in the world we live because many people end up wanting the same things. Therefore, if you don't fight for what you want, how are you supposed to get it? And why should you expect that you're going to get it? The others are going to fight. So when you don't realize that everything is a negotiation, that means that you are the only one not negotiating.
How do you determine what is worth fighting for? Because when you go through life, there are challenges. And sometimes perhaps it's to say, look, don't worry about this, don't worry about that. How do you determine that something is worth fighting for?
That's a very good question, actually, because I also think that many people struggle with that. They both struggle because they don't know what they should be fighting for. But at the same time, it seems like they struggle even more because they don't know what they should be letting go and move forward. So I would say that deep down, we all know what worth fighting for. And their instincts are always there. It's just that we are trained from a very, very young and early age not to listen to these instincts. Think of a child that you give it a broccoli and it spits it out. And then we tell it, no, it's good for you. And we shove it up their neck. There's a reason why the child doesn't want the broccoli. Maybe it's intolerant or maybe it causes a trouble in their stomach. So these instincts, not only should we as adults go back to listening more to our guts, but at the same time, we shouldn't train our children to not listen to your guts anymore.
Yeah, makes sense. I like it. Let's move on. Lesson number two. Everyone is a mess. Some people hide it better. Some thoughts come to my mind, but please, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing is that if you are a person who is into self-loathing, an entire life can pass like that. And always thinking that you're doing something wrong and everyone else got it together. But at the end, pretty much no one's got it together. We all have to suffer and we all have to suffer because life is so hard. If you think about it, everything that brings us pleasure is connected with great pain in this life. Like think of giving birth. At the same moment when you're doing something so important to you, you can't even mentally and physically connect to this thing because you're such an amazing pain. And then the suffering that you might feel from losing someone, for example, it can never be compared to any sort of joy that you can feel. But at the same time, we need to wake up every day and somehow decide actively that one more day we're going to make it, one more day we're going to be mentally healthy, we're going to go out there. And we all go through that. So to think that you're the only one that's going through that and you're the only one who changes your mind or change everything, and sometimes you want this one thing and then you don't want that, then that's futile. Most of the people are like that. It's just that not everybody is exposing themselves. Not everybody feels comfortable sharing. Everybody goes through their own journey.
I'm curious because I like what you're saying here. Everyone is a mess. But is it also that you're saying no one is perfect? Is that the same? But maybe, you know, it sounds friendlier.
It does sound friendlier. And because it sounds so much friendlier, people don't get the point of it. They do know that no one is perfect and it hasn't really helped them. But they need to understand that everyone is actually a mess. Some messes are cleaner and some messes are different. And for me, for example, maybe your mess is not a mess. But also for you, maybe my mess is not a mess. That's why it's so important to understand that it's almost never personal. It's only personal if it's about you, you thinking about yourself. That's the only personal that we have. Everything else, people have so many, many things in their minds that, yeah.
I think that's such an important point that you're making. And that's why I asked you, no one is perfect. That sounds very friendly. You know, we all understand. But when you talk about everyone is a mess, that perhaps turns on the light a little bit quicker that people say, as a matter of fact, you know, and we can all think about ourselves, I am a mess.
And I guess that even you, there must have been many. That's why we say never meet your heroes. Because we always think that this person is so amazing. They've got everything together. And then we meet them and we come closer and we say, okay, they don't have everything together. They just seem like they're having everything together.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's a good point. And it kind of links perhaps to lesson number three, focus on your strength.
Yeah. This is a very important lesson for me because I think that the entire educational system is not promoting that. The entire educational system, what they're doing is they're trying to convince you that it's very important to improve your weaknesses. And that's also important. But to try to make a career and a successful career out of your weaknesses, for me, that's paranoia. Because you can spend your entire, for example, let's say that I'm very good at listening to people. Very good. But it's very stressful for me to speak. Why become a speaker when I can become a very successful therapist? Why? And then think about students at school. What's happening there? Someone is good, let's say, at math and weak at English language. And then parents, they find them a professional tutor to help them with language. Then what happens is that this child actually loses their confidence. So basically, all the new research when it comes to self-worth and self-confidence says that you should actually put the child into more math classes because all these extra confidence that they're going to win from that are going to give them the emotional support they need to get better in English as well.
You are well-educated, PhD candidate. Obviously, your focus is on these issues. But how and when did you learn about your own strengths and weaknesses? And was there a moment that you realized, like, I'm not perfect, or to use your previous lesson, I'm a mess? And how did that come about in your own experience?
Personally, me, I have a crisis like that once every 4 years. Okay, every 4 years at least, I have one big, huge existential crisis where I'm like, okay, this is not working. I'm changing everything. I'm trying something new. And that's okay because it means I'm growing. And it's totally normal that the things that worked 4 years ago are not working this year. Last year in particular, I had this professional journey in Bologna, in Italy, where I met this artist from Portugal. And I asked him a little bit about his art. And he explained to me, he did a very interesting project about racism. And he explained to me that, you know what, Zoe, he said, for the last 3 years, I've been diving so much in this project. I couldn't think of anything else. I gave it my soul. And this is my first international exhibition. And okay. So he was 16 years old.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. When I came back to Greece, I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, what do I know? And I thought I was doing well. But I realized then something very important for me. I realized that this child, this teenager, had something that I didn't have. Until that point, it was very difficult for me to expose myself. I was always thinking, you know, maybe I should keep it more, be more humble and keep it down. And I don't have to speak so much about what I know. And then I saw this child putting it all out there. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's the only way we can share our message, by putting everything we got out there. And that's what actually inspired me to become a podcast guest and to try to, you know, share my knowledge with more people.
I see it, you know, as you know, I'm a recruiter. And when people are looking for a job and they go through the interview process and the client company likes them and they go to the next interview and then ultimately the company hires someone else, that can be a big setback for an individual. And many times they start doubting their qualifications and they say, well, I'm probably not good enough. And I'm probably because, you know, they like me until they hired someone else. Do you deal with that in your coaching as well as a career coach, that you have people that are basically underestimating who they are and do not focus on their strength?
Very, very often.
Yeah.
And the thing that they're doing wrong is that they're focusing so much on understanding other people's motivations instead of focusing on what's happening inside of them. And the problem with that is that it's the biggest trap. You will never know other people's motivation. You ask other people about their motivation, and sometimes they have no idea. They tell you, oh, I'm crazy. I do crazy things.
Yeah. No, good point. Thank you. Lesson number four, don't swipe it under the carpet. I like that one.
Yes, sounds like that. I meet all these people in business and they always come to me and they tell me, I'm amazing at conflict management. Well, that's not a medal to wear, because conflict management is not the same as conflict resolution.
Absolutely.
So conflict management is actually knowing how to swipe it under the carpet to the point that the time comes, you need to walk above this carpet and you fall down because it's such a big mountain of things that you left unmanaged, actually. So no, don't try to be diplomatic when it comes to your needs and when it comes to stuff that are creating an issue for you. We need to be able to raise these subjects and solve them the moment they appear, because only when we do it the moment they appear, we have the dignity and self-control to deal with them with appropriate amount of intensity. While if we left them, and then they grow, then they build up, then they escalate, and most probably we're gonna overreact.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a question that I was asked during a seminar, and there were several participants on the panel. I was one of them. So they asked me the question, but everybody else was asked to answer it. And I'm just going to throw it out to you. What do you do when you see something that you believe is unethical? So you work for an organization and you observe something that you believe is unethical. Maybe it's not unethical. Maybe other people can explain why that happened, or but how would you respond to that simple question? It can be challenging, but how would you respond to something to say, I think this is unethical? Would you speak out? Would you stay quiet? Would you say, hey, I don't want to lose my job. If I complain about, for example, my boss, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Or are you principled to say, I have to mention that?
Well, personally, I've been having vigilante fantasies all my life. So I would be what do you call social justice warrior? I've been speaking up since school. Like I was always the one. But why did you say this to the professor to my classmate? I don't think that that's a correct comment. I was always speaking up. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because it's very important for me to be employees' biggest advocate so that I can transfer their point of view to the management and then we can solve together and we can find a way that works for both sides. But at the same time, I do realize that there are many people that are afraid. And they're scared. Having said that, sometimes doing the right thing means that you need to do it scared.
Thank you for saying that, because it has gotten me in trouble over time by speaking out. And I have to admit, of course, I can be wrong, but I felt it was necessary to speak up because in my mind, it was, for example, unethical or wrong, whatever it was. But I'm glad to hear that from you as well, because it is important to speak out if you can, quote unquote, afford to do so. I can also see people who are very dependent on their job just to pay the bills and to get food on the table. I would not expect them to speak up and put their job at risk, depending on the issue, of course, but that's a little bit different. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Thank you. Lesson number 5, pettiness stalls your career. I'm curious. Please explain, and perhaps you have an example.
Pettiness. Well, people don't understand that, but holding grudges is such a negative factor for someone's career. Because at the end of the day, there's this theory that's called the sunflower effect. And that has to do with how people are basically trained to be attracted by positive people towards the light, like the sunflowers are always turning towards the sun. Therefore, if you are the kind of petty person, in your mind, you think that you're achieving something by holding to what's important. But at the end, you're losing network opportunities, you're destroying relationships, and you create a negative vibe at your working space. And people don't like that. So only you have to lose something. At that particular moment, you might be feeling like holding to your grudge is more important and the other person has to suffer. But do they really have to suffer? And does this really worth it so much as to even stall your career or affect your career in a negative manner? Knowing when to give up is such a trait. It's basically, for me, the definition of wisdom.
I had not heard of the sunflower concept, but I can definitely understand the way you say the sunflower will direct itself towards the sunshine no matter what. That's a very interesting point.
And the same applies to human beings. That's why you see some people that are so popular and so chill and so cool, generally cool, what we say, and people always like them. And then there are other people that they have this darkness. And what do you think darkness is? Basically, it's the public term for resentment.
Yeah, Yeah, good point. Good point, Zoe. We're talking today to Zoe Fregu, a successful organizational psychologist and a full of life dynamic performance coach, sharing her 10 lessons learned. I want to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to experience our program, 10 Lessons Learned, but also books and other podcasts. And it allows you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. Again, that is audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned, all lowercase, to get your free 30-day trial. Well, let's move along. Lesson number 6, be the person you needed when you were younger.
Oh, this one's personal. This one is personal, and I've written very recently an article about that. It's personal because what led me to write this article is thinking about all these things that would have saved me so much time and would have helped me so much through my career if somebody had told me. And then all these people knew about all these things and then no one told me. So basically, I realized that this pathogenic cycle of futile competition needs to end with us. And when I say with us, it's my generation. We need to do better. We need to be able to mentor the younger and the newer people, even if we're young ourselves, and provide them with every little piece of information that if we had it in time, it would have been helpful for us.
Is there a lesson, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm sure you can handle this. Is there a lesson that you would teach yourself if you would be, can I say, 20 years old, right? Doesn't matter the age, but lessons that you have learned that you wish you would have picked up earlier in life. Is there maybe an example?
I can give you a very, very nice example. To negotiate harder. Have you ever heard of the pay gap between women and men?
Oh,
yes. You've heard about it.
Of course.
Yes. What do you think exactly happens? It's not like the employees see you on the interview and say, okay, you're a woman, I'm going to give you 30% less. It's just that women accept 30% less because we are trained socially to accept less. And nobody helped me understand that. I had to figure it out on my own. Do you know, it's going to be, I don't know if we have time, but it's a very fun story. Some years ago, I was listening to Jennifer Lawrence. And that year, she was the most successful actress. And she had gained something like $50 million that year. And then the most successful actor was Robert Downey Jr., who had gained $80 million. So she said in an interview that, you know what, I also blame myself because I realized now that I could have negotiated harder and I could have gained $80 million. So when I heard that, I said, you know what, Zoe, you know about pay gap and you know that this happens and you know all about the stigma. So there's no way I'm not being affected by everything that I hear. So I took out a proposal that I was preparing for a client. And in this proposal, let's say I had given an X amount and I raised it by 25% just to see what happens. So I go there to them, I present the proposal and they tell me, okay, but the money is a bit too much. We will accept this number, which was already 20% more from what I would have been okay with.
It is such an important point, obviously. And for me, as a, you know, sometimes I say as a tall white guy, it's easy to talk about these things, right? But I can assure you that from the very start of my career in the 1980s, and I'll keep it short here, but I worked with a colleague, female, and we thought, how did she get that job? Because, you know, it was different. It turned out very quickly within the first 6 months that she did better business than I did. She was a great person to work with. And it was a lesson that I learned early on about the equality. And I am still today frustrated when I encounter the inequality when it comes to the pay gap, or, you know, it's a female qualified for this position. Can we really do this? I feel very strongly about that. And I have seen in my recruiting career so many impressive women, and where even clients said, well, it's hard to find a female for, maybe hard, but not impossible. And gradually it takes time. And of course, you and I both know that there are certain countries where women are still very much restricted. We can say that's not
most
right.
Most of the countries, to be fair, most of the countries, not some countries.
Well, yeah, and you know, and then the definition of what is restricted. You can say they don't have full access. Yes, that is restricted. Or in some cases, they're not allowed to work in certain positions. And that is, you know, even more extreme. But do you believe that there is change happening and gradually, you know, give it time that we're on that road to equality? Or do you have doubts? Yeah, tough question.
Yeah, we didn't come so far to only come this far. But at the same time, it's not enough. I will tell you something that you won't believe, but up to this day, there is an entire part of Greece where women are not allowed to enter because the church has dedicated this part to Holy Mother. And according to that, it would be an insult to her for other women to enter an entire part of Greece. And when I say a part, don't imagine a small village or a small even town. It's an entire part of Greece where women are not allowed. So no, it's not enough. We should do more.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that. And of course, our podcast, 10 Lessons Learned, goes global. We have listeners truly all over the world, and that's part of our mission. And I'm very grateful for you sharing these experiences, and they need to be heard all over the world. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. Moving along. Lesson number 7, all we have is the connections that we make. I have some thoughts about that, but please explain your side of the story.
Well, it's a very lonely world. And the only way to fight this existential loneliness is through connecting with other people. And we should never neglect that. Sometimes career, job, daily life, they come in the way. But at the end, all we have is the connections we make. Not only in a networking sense, which of course is helpful, but also, are we anything without our support group? Whatever a support group means to anyone, but relationships need to be taken care of. And we should never, never forget that. Don't take for granted your friends. Spend time with them. It's not just about quality. It's also about quantity. If you don't have experiences about a person, then there is no relationship. It will fade away.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Do you have a specific example that comes to mind?
Have you noticed that the older people get, for example, they tend to let stuff like family and kids and daily life and occupation get in the way of meeting their friends. And then after a while, they don't have friends anymore. They call their friends and they don't even know what's going on in their lives. And then when you're younger, there are traditions. There are things that you're always doing together. And then things are getting in the way and you don't do them together. Well, what I'm trying to say is that don't allow these things to get in the way, because most of the times they're just excuses. You feel tired. Don't cancel the coffee with your friend because you feel tired. It's going to be rewarding. I swear it's going to be rewarding in the long run.
I can hear the coach in you. Thank you. That's a good point. And it kind of connects perhaps to your lesson number 8. Stop starting, start finishing. I thought about that and I like it a lot, but please, your thoughts on that.
Oh my God. That makes me a bit mad. I will tell about my sister, and I hope she does. She's very, very young. I hope she won't listen to this podcast and get mad at me. She's very young. She's like 10 years younger than me. And every year she comes to me and she's like, this year I'm going to start Italian and I'm going to start French and I'm going to start. And then I hear, didn't you start last year, I don't know, yoga? I say, yeah, I am moved over that. Okay, maybe it's important to get deep into something in order to learn how to love it and let it become more complex and understand its depth. When you constantly switch through activities and switch through people and switch through professions, you never go deep into anything. Never. So you never really learn anything. And it's very easy to do the first steps of something. When you pick up a language, try pick up French. The first year is very easy. Everyone can learn how to say bonjour, how are you doing, etc. But then you actually want to get into that and be able to communicate deep with a person, it takes time. So at this point, maybe it's more about quality. Maybe it's the opposite of what we said before. And maybe it's more important to start finishing things instead of constantly starting new things.
How do you see the future of your career? I mean, you are highly successful. Is there a moment perhaps that you are thinking of and say, well, if I reach this point in my career, or perhaps even an age bracket that you say, if I turn, you know, this age, I'm going to change things, I'm going to take it easy? Or do you see yourself, indeed, you're going to keep going, you're going to continue?
Well, I don't approach it as a career as much as I approach it as a lifestyle, because I'm a scientist. So it's not like if I didn't read psychology, I would read, I don't know, astrology. I really, really, really am committed to what I'm doing. It's my interest. It has always been my interest. I've been reading about psychology since I was a kid, basically. So, yeah, it's more of a lifestyle for me. It's what I'm doing and how
it's internal. It's the way you are wired, that it comes from within.
Yeah. Maybe if I was doing a different kind of job that was not connected to my inner passions, I would have this need that you described. But at the moment, I feel it more like my interests are switching more. Like, for example, this period in my life, I'm more connected with my speaking. But I do also know that maybe later in life, I would like to write even more. So, yeah.
Makes sense. I like it. Lesson number 9. We're almost at lesson number 10. But lesson number 9. Consistency is about showing up.
Oh, yes. This I will connect with the previous example of learning a new language. So it's not about always giving your 100%. This is also a very nice excuse that people are using in order to not show up and not do the job. I'm not feeling it today, or I won't give my best self. So since I'm a little tired, I won't go to the gym. Or since I'm a little tired, I will cancel my French class. It's not about that. It's about showing up even if you give 10%. It's about showing up even if you give 20%. Some very few times you might give 100. But if you only show up when you have 100 to give, there's no way you will reach any outcome. So we need to break this pattern of believing that consistency is about always being our 100. Because even if you just go to the gym and run for 10 minutes, it's better than not going to the gym at all. It's a fact.
I fully 100% agree with you. It is so important. Interesting. Well, lesson number 10. Always be the last one to speak. Wow. I like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that especially for people that are very dynamic personalities and they tend to occupy a lot of space in the room, or maybe they're in a leadership position, this one is even more important to understand. Because when you're the last one to speak, not only do you gain yourself extra time, but you can learn from the wisdom of other people. So you won't repeat yourself, you won't say the old views, and you can fix a thought. So it's a very important lesson, in my opinion. One that, for me, it took a lot of time to learn, because I'm very, you know, passionate usually and very spontaneous. So it's the kind of lesson that it required maturity for me to learn.
The concept of active learning, is that something that you apply in your work, in your coaching?
Yeah, of course, very much. And not only in a very passive sense as well. I'm trying to learn from every single conversation that I have. I'm learning from my clients. I might be learning from my clients more than they're learning from me.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, that's a very good way of looking at it.
Which makes sense, because, by the way, my clients are brilliant. They're like super successful, amazing individuals from all over the world. So I would be stupid not to learn from them.
But you can help them. You can guide them. You can point out certain elements of their whatever behavior, performance,
etc. I'm just their critique partner. I'm just there to raise a different perspective, but they're doing all the job themselves. I won't take any credit for their own transformation.
You're very humble when you say that, because I know you have a great reputation. I'm also curious. I want to ask you another question here. Are there any lessons in your life that you have learned that perhaps you would say you have unlearned? In other words, lessons that you have unlearned in your life, that you decided to do it differently, go a different direction.
Okay, yes, that's interesting. And it actually connects a lot with the last thing we said. Younger in life, I really thought that being patient and waiting for things to happen and waiting for other people to think about my needs was key. And that if I waited enough, then the other person is going to understand what I need and they're going to give it to me. Thankfully, I unlearned that. And now I do know, and I say to everyone, that if you don't speak up about your needs, you will never get what you want. Never. Speaking up is key. And when I say speaking up, I mean verbally, with actual words. Say it. Don't assume they will understand. Don't show it with body language. Don't show it with a silent treatment or a passive-aggressive way, very, very clearly. Even when it comes to crazy stuff that you might want. Some years ago, when I was a student, I was watching Hugh Jackman presenting the Tonys, the Emmys, something. And I really liked him. And I said, oh my God, I love what he's doing. I think I would be so good at that. On my own, I thought of that. All right. So then I made a video of myself. And I sent it to many event companies. And I said, I think that I would be a very good MC. Try me out if you have. And I ended up working as a master of ceremony for 2 years. I presented, while a student, I presented awards, I presented events, and it was the funniest period of my life, I think. This would never happen. How would these people know that I can do that if I didn't send a demo of myself on my own?
Fascinating. You make me think of a management guru in the United States. He is a little bit older these days, Jack Welch. I don't know if you heard of him. He was with General Electric, very successful. He has written several books on management. And at some point, he talks about what he explains as the four E's, words that start with the letter E. And number one, energy. You, Zoe, you beam out a lot of energy. The second E is the ability to energize other people. And again, in your work and in what you're sharing, you seem to be very much someone that can energize other people. Good for you. The third E is every person has a certain edge, something that makes them unique. And clearly, we could probably talk for another, let's say, 10 lessons, because there are a lot of things that you do and it's obvious. And the fourth E that Jack Welch is using is the ability to execute. That's slightly different, but to be able to have measurable results. And that's something that we haven't touched on today, but I wouldn't be surprised if you cover that E as well. So very interesting. And I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience. And with that, I'll make some closing comments. First of all, Zoe, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing your wisdoms with our global audience. You have been listening to the international program, 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is produced by Robert Hosry. And as always, we are supported by the Professional Development Forum. Our guest today, Zoe Fragu, a successful organizational psychologist and a full of life dynamic performance coach, sharing her 10 lessons learned. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That is podcast@10lessonslearned.com. I hope you will subscribe, and in that way you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you, and stay safe.